You can catch the rebroadcast every Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m.
Be sure to join us next time as we share our news with our voice from our perspective. And until then,
peace.
Peace.
Hey, my name is Ron Roger. I'm an actor from such shows as Matlock, Stranger Things, Power Rangers, and maybe a few more. You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Don't speak Spanish in California. Well, you just did, ma'am. You just did, but, you know.
That's it. I mean, yeah. The immigrants, that's the amazing thing. Immigrants built this country.
Yeah, from the Chinese built the railroads to the Filipinos were side by side with all the other Latinos in the field. We're a nation of immigrants. I'm sure your family came from somewhere other than North America, you know.
Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, all down the...
Good morning. This is KPFK's Working Voices. I'm Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr, sitting in for Joe Ayala.
And I'm your co-host, Kristen Parker, from Montebello Teachers Association.
And in this morning's show, Steve Zeltzer's Labor Video has a clip from an interview with Deemster Local 396 steward Hannibal Aguilar. Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United speaks with Pastor Stephen Allred of the Church State Council, and we have the latest strike news with this week's Working Voices update. All this and more coming up this morning on KPFK's 90.7 FM Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
This morning, Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel, Southern California IBT 396 Teamster Steward Hannibal Aguilar, got involved in the political struggle inside his local. He talks about his history and issues he and other Teamsters face, including democracy and the attacks Latino and immigrant workers face with ICE throughout the country.
This is Steve Zeltzer with Workweek, and we're looking at the struggle in the Teamsters Union over health and safety, over AI, and also the fight for union democracy and stand up for members who are fighting employers. Hannibal Aguilar, he is with Teamsters Local 396 and has been involved in a struggle over his health and safety and AI and also to democratize the union. Welcome to our show, Hannibal.
Thank you.
So Hannibal, why don't you talk about your history as a Teamster?
I started off as a package handler in 1996 in a town called Vernon, California, which is right next to East Los Angeles, a working class city. And then directly after that, maybe a year and a half after that, a year I got hired, the 97 strike happened. And being in the strike, it kind of like made me who I am today as like an activist and someone that wants to speak out for the rank and file. It was a very revolutionary point in my life to go through the strike. I had lost my apartment. I was living out of my car after that, but I never looked back and thought that it was a bad thing. I always saw that it was positive that I was involved in a strike, and I saw what worker power and solidarity can do.
And I remember that strike because it was a national strike. A lot of activists, community people were involved in it. Part-time jobs don't work. And I remember the New York Times after that strike complained that the problem is that Ron Kerry had brainwashed people in this country into believing it was over part-time work.
Yeah.
So that was that was a complaint. So it was a successful strike. So you have been working as a UPS worker, and what got you involved most recently in the struggle within the union over your health and safety?
Well, one of the main things was during the strike negotiations, we had somebody in our local that had passed away from heat exhaustion, and they were supposed to put in AC in our trucks. So we kind of fought for that, but we haven't got those yet. And now we have these AI cameras that are inside of our truck that scanned your eyes and your facial expressions and everything you do inside that truck. And it's an infrared light. And if anybody knows anything, that overexposure to infrared light is not good for you. And there's been no tests. There's been no studies. There's nothing that warned us against what's inside of our truck. So a big reason I came out to be a voice for the rank and file and for the drivers and for everybody that has one of those cameras that are constantly on you is because of the inaction of my local, the inaction of my union. And since their inaction, it's made me jump into action and just try to let everybody know that AI, automation, these cameras that track our eyes, they're not tested. They're just thrown into the system and we're supposed to accept it, but we're not guinea pigs. And I'm just here to let everybody know that we have a voice and we can, if our local's not going to abide by the contract, then we can at least try to make them.
Well, it says in your contract, they have to protect health and safety. When you raise the issue in the union, what do the union officials say about the introduction of these AI cameras, infrared cameras into your cabs?
Well, I never raised the issue personally. I'm on a slate with a guy named Eric Johnson that raised the issue. And Eric Johnson and Mike Moxley had been very proactive in trying to get these cameras out of our cabs. And they understand the complexities of the contract language. They understand how UPS changes the words from camera to sensor, but they're both really the same thing. And they've been involved. They've put their money, their hard-earned money into like doing it and to finding out if those cameras are safe for us. So I can't take credit. But I can tell you is that they put their hard-earned money into it. My local told me that I had to prove to them that it was a camera. And it wasn't the other way around. They weren't going to try to find out, even though I pay my dues. So
doesn't the IBT International have a health and safety department? I mean, this is apparently workers have gotten cataracts. Drivers have been gotten cataract. They've gotten sick as a result of this camera. It's on your eyes 60 hours a week. It seems like that's a serious health and safety issue.
Well, I'm a UPS driver, so I'm normally in and out of that cab. So my exposure is a lot less than let's say a feeder driver or somebody that drives long distances or long miles. But what I will say this about the IBT is they do have that department. And I'm hoping that me coming out a rank and file, that I paid my dues and I've been a Teamster for 30 years, that they'll start listening to us and start protecting us. And maybe what Eric Johnson, Mike Moxley, and everybody have done is maybe we're igniting a spark in everybody to really pay attention and to really watch out for your rank and file. So let's hope they do something.
And just this past week, UPS announced they're going to get rid of 30,000 jobs. I was at the rally in Sacramento for the bill that the legislature passed almost unanimously, requiring a driver, if you have a truck 10,000 pounds or more. It was vetoed twice by Newsom, who the union supported in California, and it's apparently disappeared as an issue. Or has there been any rallies, any education campaign organizing to fight back and to get protection against the introduction of AI if it's eliminating large numbers of jobs? It's could be an existential question.
Well, I know that my union was very involved in that early on, and that they publicly shame Newsom, which he deserves it, because you're the California governor and you're not beholden to to Silicon Valley. You're beholden to the voters and you're beholden to the working class people of California. And that's what I want to say about Newsom. What I will say about the union is that I haven't heard any action of it after that. It was a loud roar, but after that, I haven't heard anything. I will say that all of us in general have to really worry about the automation and the robotics and the taking of all of our jobs, be it Waymo or whatever the case may be. There's going to be a point when it all just blows up in our faces and it's not going to be a good time. We all have to get together now. But I haven't heard anything. I'm upset that our leaders, no matter if they're Democrat or Republican, have let us down, and they're not looking out for the interests of the working class people.
And Richard Hooker, in a recent interview, said that he thought that we needed a labor party in this country, a working class party for the workers of this country. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I agree that we've been a two-party system for far too long. And once you do something for far too long, you get complacent. And I think the Democrats have got complacent. And I think that the Republicans have got complacent. And I think that Citizens United, by letting corporations be considered citizens and be able to influx money into our elections, I think that we are seeing the problems now. We're seeing it politically. We're seeing it, be it with the Supreme Court, just everything that's going on with the American political environment is because we've let corporations put their money into our elections. And it's up to us as the working class people of the middle class, of the lower class, whoever it be, to start to say, hey, we're going to have our own party. And we're not going to be beholden to anybody other than the people of the United States. And I think that can be revolutionary.
And of course, workers in this country don't even have health care, national health care. If you lose your job, you lose your health care. They're cutting back on ACA subsidies, Medicaid. It seems like very survival of working people is in question now. If they don't have health care, a lot of workers are going to die.
Well, that's why I'm proud of being a Teamster. I'm proud because I have good health care. And no matter what the case may be, and people might have problems with the leadership, that's something that the Teamsters have given me, a good health care, a good pension, a good 401k with my company. But lately, it's starting to seem like that might not be on the table, the next contract for me, because systematically they're taking it away from everybody, even people that need it and can't afford it. And in the long run, I think only we as working class people that rely on your job and rely on your medical from your job are the only people that are going to have a voice. And that's why maybe a party would be good for the United States, another party, a party that looks out for our interests.
And at the rally in Sacramento, Sean O'Brien, the president, said that in the UPS contract, they had stopped AI and the introduction of robotics into UPS. And I found that very strange, because stopping AI, stopping robotics, hasn't stopped at UPS, the introduction of AI and robotics.
Well, I've heard that our IBT president's slate name is Oz. So maybe he's kind of like the Wizard of Oz. A lot of smoke and mirrors. What we have to do is we have to take that curtain and see who's really behind all this, because we don't hear much from him anymore. And when we did, a lot of it wasn't true. And that goes to show you that when he promised that and he said that he protected us from AI and automation with the building closures of UPS, with the amount of layoffs at UPS, and I'm not even talking about other companies, when it comes to Yellow and just other companies, Mouser, that feel like they were betrayed by the IBT. It just goes to show you that now's the time to start rattling the cages and let our leadership know that we're not happy.
You've been on a different approach. You've been out campaigning and talking to members. And you said to me earlier, one of the things you discovered, most members have no knowledge, awareness of the union structure, national convention coming up. What is happening in the union? Do you think that's purposeful, that they don't the union doesn't want to educate people about their own union, the structures, how it's organized, how to get involved, how to become a delegate to the International Convention?
Well, I think that if we were really to want worker power, we would educate. We would invite every single Teamster to try to make the convention so that your voice was heard and you'd know what's going on in your respective company and in other Teamsters' respective company, because their failure is my failure, because an injury to one is an injury to all. Now, I'm going to my hubs, campaigning for a slate that I'm running against my local, just so that we can go to the convention and have a voice for the rank and file. My slate is ran by rank and file, and I am not the leader. I am not the leader of my local 396 integrity slate. It is young, old feeder drivers, part-time drivers, package car drivers, and they're doing the work. And I'm showing up to campaign, but they're doing the work. And it's a fresh of breath air to see that a lot of the Teamsters are starting to wake up. They're starting to wake up. And that's a positive thing.
It's their future.
It is. I'm ready to retire. I've been driving for 30 years, or I've been at UPS for 30 years. And it's about the end of my career. But I want to make sure that everybody below me, everybody that is driving now for a year or 4 years, that they have the same opportunities that I do, the same life that I was able to have. And I have to fight for it.
And of course, if AI is introduced massively, as they're planning to do, that means the elimination of members, and your whole pension plan, your whole system of defending members is going to be undermined with the pension system and the number of workers reduced. And you're going to be participating in a conference this coming weekend in Los Angeles on AI, the future of labor. You think it's important that not only Teamsters, but all workers, healthcare workers, educators, movie workers all get together and start talking about how they're being affected and the need to educate themselves and to begin to struggle to defend themselves?
Well, I wanted my union and the local to use like a three-pronged strategy, right? And the three-pronged strategy would be collective bargaining. When it comes to contract time, we put it into the contract that they have to limit the use of AI. If they start implementing AI, then whatever they implement with AI, we still keep that job, whatever the case may be. Whatever the case may be with collective bargaining, when we get to that point, we have to really start to talk to the people and the respective governments, California, whatever, that you better start taking care of our jobs. And if you don't, you're not going to have a job either. And that's very important. And that's mobilizing all unions and strategic partnerships, right? So mobilizing all unions, every union, it's not us against everybody, it's solidarity. And we need help from every single union other than Teamsters so that we could stop this. And from there, we'll build leaders and we'll build people that follow and we'll understand the struggle that we're all in. And we just have to empower people, and we have to educate them, because education's not there. Everybody's trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes, but education's not there, and we can do it.
And one of the issues I know that I've been fighting for decades is a labor channel. My union, I'm the CWA, we should have a national labor channel bringing together workers, educating them about AI, deregulation, privatization. All these issues are working class issues, and we have the resources, our unions do, to have a labor channel, to get the education out there. Spanish and English, different languages. And the last thing is, there was a introduction of the ICE into Los Angeles, and there were some battles there. How has that affected your members and the workers in Los Angeles area?
I think that the local media kind of makes it seem like it's a battlefield out here. But where the federal building is in Los Angeles, it's about maybe one block of Little Tokyo and Olvera Street. And it doesn't necessarily affect the workers, but what's happening is a lot of people are starting to wonder, like, what might happen to me? I'm a DACA driver. I'm a naturalized driver, and I have to go and get my worker's permit again. What's going to happen if I go to the to the office. And it's fearful. It's fearful that one of my brothers that I work with feels that way, is afraid in the United States. And that's a big reason why I'm doing this. I'm not a principal officer. I haven't been at a BA for 40 years, and I don't understand what the average person goes through. I actually do the job. And it's very sad that we're at this point in the United States. And will I say it affects our job? Technically, no. Will I say that it affects us psychologically? Yes. I'm Mexican-American, and I'm proud of that. My family has been in California for more than 200 years. But I still understand that the Supreme Court said that I could be stopped if I speak my other native tongue or if I'm with someone that's darker. And that's extremely upsetting. And people have to start to understand and know that no one's going to look out for us but us ourselves. And, you know, that's why I'm here.
And has Sean O'Brien, the president of the Teamsters, ever challenged what is happening to Latinos, Latin Americans, and other immigrants? Because there are a lot of Teamsters who are members of the Teamsters Union who are immigrants.
I will say one thing, that he's been very silent. I'm not one to talk about leadership and their misgivings. But I think that if you open your eyes, you could see all of the misgivings, especially the dinners with Kristi Noem. That sends a big message to the people in the West. That sends a big message to the Mexicano like me, to the Mexican-American in me. Because in the long run, I was raised an American, and I love America. And I also have passion, and I also have my Latino side. But I understand what being an American is, because my mom was an American. My grandmother was an American. My great-grandmother before that was forced into being an American. But other than that, his silence has said a lot.
And of course, California used to be part of Mexico at one time.
Oh, so that was it. A lot of people say, don't speak Spanish in California. Well, you just did, ma'am. You just did, but you know.
That's it. I mean, the immigrants, that's the amazing thing. Immigrants built this country.
Yeah, from the Chinese built the railroads to the Filipinos were side by side with all the other Latinos in the fields. We're a nation of immigrants. I'm sure your family came from somewhere other than North America, you know, Steve. And I don't ask you where you're from, you know. And you have to think about it that, yeah, I have Spanish because I'm Mexican, but I also have indigenous blood, which is an indigenous to this land, to this very soil that we're on. And I'm proud of that. But I'm also proud that I'm American because, you know, there's no better country. And I think that if we can actually start to work together to understand that the person that's working next to you is not the person that you should be worried about, then we're going to achieve a lot again. You know, we got rid of the robber barons and their thing, you know, in the 1900s, and we can do it again.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And you're running on a slate. Why don't you say what it is and how people can get in touch with it?
I'm running on the Fearless slate, and we're running for the IBT against Sean O'Brien and Steve Zuckerman. You could find us on fearless.org and go on any site from Instagram to Facebook and just look up Fearless Teamsters, you know, even go into AI or whatever the case may be on your phone and put that in and you'll find us. It's important because I think that this is a different election, that Sean O'Brien has shown that he has a lot of inaction. And now it's up to the people that actually care and the rank and file, which the Fearless slate has a lot of rank and file on it, which is very, very wonderful when you think about it. It's beautiful that you have somebody that's getting up and putting the browns on or going and doing the clerical work. And they're a Teamster, but they're also running for the national because they actually believe that that's how much of a change we need. And, you know, we always like to tell people, be fearless and look up Richard Hooker. John Palmer. He's running for Secretary Treasurer, and I have a lot of faith in them, and I hope you have a lot of faith in me after watching, hearing this, or whatever the case may be.
And you have a, good rap song, too.
Yeah.
You got to have music.
That's Eric Johnson, you know? He loves to dance, I've heard. But, yeah.
I love to dance, too. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. We've been talking with Hannibal Aguilar. He's with Local 396 Southern California, and talking about AI in the cabs, these infrared cameras, and also the struggle for democracy, membership power in the union. So thanks for joining us.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net.
Well, there's no denying that we're entering a year where independent voices like KPFK's 90.7 FM have never been more critical. So we here at Working Voices are asking our union listeners for a little solidarity and support. KPFK was trying to get 500 new sustainers before the end of 2025. And seriously, when do union people ever think it's okay not to stand up for working people? That's what I'm here to ask you to do. Take a moment out to keep Working Voices strong. And if you haven't already, go online to kpfk.org or go to our phone lines at 818-985-5735 and pledge 5, 10, 20 bucks a month. Whatever you can, and become a sustainer. Go online to kpfk.org or go to our phone lines at 818-985-5735 and stand in solidarity with KPFK's Working Voices.
90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles. In our next segment, Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United Radio interviews special guest, Pastor Stephen Allred, Director of Government Relations for the Seventh-day Adventist Ministry on Religious Liberties Church-State Council, who discusses social justice, immigration, and Christian nationalism.
Welcome to Spanish United Radio. I'm your host, Enrique Sanchez. We have a special guest. Can you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Hi, my name is Steve Allred, and I'm an attorney and a pastor, and I work as the Director of Government Relations for the Church State Council, which is a religious liberty ministry for the Seventh-day Adventist Church on the West Coast here in the United States.
You were having your conference about the importance of religious liberty, how it stands in terms of Christian nationalism, and also the issue of immigration. So talk a little bit first about what your institution does, what's their purpose, and at the same time, where does that fit in terms of religious freedom, particularly towards Hispanic immigrants in the United States?
So the Church State Council does three main things. We have a legal services department that we assist people of faith with religious discrimination matters, people who might be trying to practice their faith and it conflicts with a job requirement in the workplace, or maybe in the school, if there's a test on a holy day or something of that nature, or for people who are incarcerated as well, and they might have dietary needs that the jail or prison is not willing to work with them on sometimes, so we'll go to bat for them. The other two things we do are education, which would include speaking and writing and webinars and that type of thing. And then thirdly, legislative advocacy. And really our philosophy is this, that religious freedom is best maintained when the church and the state are separate, not a theocracy, not a Christian-controlled government, but instead a government that's independent from the church and vice versa. And yet the church can still speak out into society with a prophetic voice on issues of social justice, issues that have to do with, you know, how people are treated in society. But when it comes to religion and faith, that's not something that should ever be imposed through law. But really needing to be a prophetic voice and say, we as people of faith, all of the great religions in the world teach the golden rule, right? Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. So the point being that, yeah, at our best, we ought to be living out the golden rule by the grace of God. And that really gets down to how do we treat people who are, you know, have less social, political, or even financial capital than we do in society. And so I think that's an issue where, again, this is not a religious thing so much. I mean, it is religious, but it's not just religious. It's a human relationship thing. And this is a legitimate area for the church to speak out in society and say, we need to treat each other well. This is a legitimate thing for us to talk about on a public policy level, on a political level as well. And so I think that gets to immigration. I mean, there's some nuances and we can talk about what that looks like.
Right.
But that's the big picture for me.
One thing that I'm seeing, especially among the far right, is that there is little to no emphasis on social justice. And unfortunately, religious liberty is being weaponized and is being used to fight against people that really cannot defend themselves. Because right now, we feel that the Hispanic community is under assault by ICE and by the establishment. And I feel that the church, more than ever before, has to do their part in protecting the rights of those that cannot defend themselves, because there are many Hispanics that are immigrants that are members of faith communities. What would you say to those Hispanic people that are immigrants, that are people of faith, that feel that their faith community is not doing enough for them to protect them?
I would say, I'm sorry. I apologize on behalf of those faith communities, because that is a very sad situation. In fact, I just was talking to somebody yesterday who told me that some members of the church that she attends are actually turning in other members to immigration enforcement, you know, who are undocumented. And I'm just thinking, you know, it just kind of is like, really? I mean, you know, I we could talk about what, you know, immigration policy maybe should look like from a Christian perspective or whatever. But to me, you know, it is sad, because a lot of these people, as you and I know, are coming to our country to escape gang violence, war, religious persecution many times. Some people come here just to have a better life. But come on. You know, you would do the same thing if you were living in abject poverty in a different country. So would I, right? I mean, we would try to find the best life for our kids. So don't blame these people, number one. Number two, a lot of them have been here for years and years, have been very productive citizens in members of our society, paying into our you know, tax system, never going to reap the benefits unless they become citizens themselves. And they're good people. They're upstanding people. But I think what's happened is the church in America has become corrupted by politics. And the evidence is this. The evangelical right, they're very interested in social justice for the unborn child. Abortion, right? I mean, that's their big thing. It's abortion and whatever. So they're cool with social justice. But it's only the stuff that their political party or, you know, platform says they should care about. To let that guide them. And that to me is a problem. Politics is informing you more than your faith. Politics should not be the thing that determines the principles that you operate by. You should figure those out first with God. But the point here is that, yeah, they do care about social justice. They only care about the issues, though, that their political party tells them to care about. So I think it's, again, this is a corruption of the church. The theology has been corrupted and co-opted by politics, and that's our problem, I think, today.
I feel that many of the politicians and the religious leaders, aside from wanting to create a theocracy, a Christian theocracy, a lot of them believe in the Great Replacement Theory or Dominion Theology. Mm-hmm. Christian nationalism is not just religious nationalism, is also racial nationalism. So, you know, there are many Christians that are Christian nationalists, but they're not white supremacists or black supremacists per se. But that could create genocide and consequences.
I mean, historically, we could think of a lot of examples, couldn't we? I think you talked about dominion theology.
Correct.
But the dominion theology thing is really a heresy that you don't find in scripture. Jesus never calls his followers to dominate, because that's what dominion means, right? To exercise dominion over the world. What he does call his followers to do in Luke chapter 22 is to serve. And the people that are going to heaven are the ones who have fed the hungry, clothed the naked, been with those who are incarcerated, welcomed the foreigner, that's the Greek word there, and because they have been serving, that's why they're going to fit into heaven. He never calls us to dominate. So this dominion theology thing where Christians think they're supposed to dominate every part of culture and politics, it really is old covenant thinking that's crept into the church. And they're taking the Old Testament idea of theocracy. Right. That is a heresy that's crept into the church here in the last, 50 years.
As you know, you have many among the far right that are very avid supporters of the Second Amendment, to the point where they believe that guns and church and Bible should go together.
Nowhere in the New Testament do you see Jesus in any way condoning. In fact, he condemns his followers taking up arms. There's zero examples of the church ever doing that. In fact, Jesus calls us to love our enemies. In fact, as he's being crucified on the cross, he prays for their forgiveness, for their salvation. This is what he calls us to do. And that really is the big thing. So God knows he can't win that battle with us picking up swords and going and saying, hey, serve Jesus or else. It has to be through free will and through winning them with love. And that's why we even love our enemies, because the blood of the martyrs was seed. This is why the church doesn't take up the sword. This is why when we're promoting guns and violence in church, it's anathema.
Yeah, and I feel that's the problem with what I'm seeing with many on the far right spectrum of Christianity. And another concern that I have is that because of propaganda against immigrants, I feel that many Christians, that are, pro Second Amendment, feel that Hispanic immigrants are the enemies, that Hispanics are gang members, drug dealers, rapists, etc., and that they are the ones that are going to take away their safety. And I feel that could possibly lead into civil war. And many Hispanics feel that if they are continue to be mistreated and pushed aside, it could come to a point, God forbid it doesn't happen, where the Hispanic population can cause civil unrest, and that it could erupt into something dangerous later on. And I think that the church needs to do their part in trying to prevent that from happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it really, I think it's about the church and church leadership speaking the truth to people, right? And, one of the things I'm trying to do in my work is to preach this message that we've been talking about here, this idea that God calls us to love our enemies, that Paul says in Ephesians 6, we wrestle not against flesh and blood,
but against the spirits and principalities.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just really clear. And he says in 1 Corinthians, I think it's 10, he says, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. I mean, it's not fleshly, physical, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Oh, yeah, there are enemies to fight. There are things to be dominated in the name of Jesus, but it's not people and it's not politics and it's not physical things. It's spiritual things that God calls us to fight against. And guess what? We can't do that by ourselves either, because demons could destroy us in a second. But because of Jesus and his power and the Holy Spirit, we are more than conquerors through him that loved us, right? So the point is that, this is a totally different. This is why, I feel like, as Shane Claiborne, who's a Christian writer, you might know Shane, activist, whatever. he says that, you know, he calls it the upside down kingdom. It is. I mean, Jesus says, love your enemies. I mean, come on. What kind of kingdom, you know, is that, right? Jesus says, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. I mean, who wants a bunch of poor people in their country? Well, this country apparently doesn't, because we're telling them now you have to pay $1 million to get the gold visa to come over here or whatever, you know, I mean, right. Stuff like that. No, so Jesus's kingdom is a totally different kind of kingdom, because God is looking at the heart. He doesn't look at the outward. He looks at the heart, because he knows that's what really matters. And so anyway, but yeah, no, I think what you're talking about with civil unrest and civil war, you know, really kind of racially based, you know, I'm not a prophet. I have no idea if that would ever happen, but the possibility's there. And it's disturbing to me to see so many Christians who are believing lies and propaganda, and really boils down to bad theology for Christians, you know.
Absolutely, and that's a lot that's going on these days. Well, anyway, we've come to the end of our time. I want to tell you, Stephen, thank you for being a guest on the show, and for all of our listeners, we are on all social media platforms. We are on Spanish United Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, now known as X, on YouTube. And again, Stephen, thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Hey, thank you for having me, Enrique. I really appreciate what you're doing.
That was Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United. For more interviews, videos, and information from Enrique Sanchez, you can go to his Spanish United YouTube channel, or you can find him at the Spanish United webpage. And for more information on Pastor Stephen Allred and the Church State Council, you can find them at churchstate.org. Get paid what our labor is worth. That's why we often in a daze on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about. And now we never get paid what our labor is worth. That's why we often in a daze on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
This is Dan McCord for Working Voices, talking to Lisa Polo, who's a nurse at Kaiser Permanente in Woodland Hills. What's going on here today?
Hi, Dan. Thank you for asking. Today, the nurses are out here full force to show Kaiser that we want safe conditions inside our work environment. It has been, you know, understaffed for way too long. We went through COVID from 2020 to 2022. And we waited for them to come to the table and give us the raise that we were promised, and they did not. So now we are fiercely fighting for not only safe staffing, but the fair wages that we were promised.
And that's what the unfair labor practice is about, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So how's it looking? Have you heard?
Actually, we have heard from Kaiser. They are willing to meet us tomorrow. That announcement just came out yesterday.
Oh, great.
Yes, so they are willing to come to the table and start talking, which is progress. Yes.
Great. Excellent. How long have you been at this facility?
So I've been with Kaiser Woodland Hills since 1997, but as a nurse, I started in 2001. Oncology is my specialty, so of course I have a passion for my cancer patients who are fighting for their lives, and we want to get back in there and help them get to where, you know, their goal, which is to have their life back.
Excellent. Yeah. I appreciate your time, and thanks for bringing us up today.
That was Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory talking to people at the Woodland Hills Kaiser Permanente strike. An overall strike which has grown to an estimated 31,000 registered nurses and other frontline Kaiser Permanente healthcare workers as they launched an open-ended strike this week in California and Hawaii to demand better wages and staffing from the healthcare giant. The picketing that began Monday marked the second major walkout in recent months by employees represented by the United Nurses Association of California Union of Healthcare Professionals. A 5-day strike in October ended with negotiations resuming, but talks broke down in December. This week, the union accused Kaiser of refusing to return to national bargaining discussions. We will continue to push Kaiser to stop their egregious unfair labor practices against the frontline workers who deliver the best care for their patients and billions in profit to do the right thing and come back to the table to bargain in good faith, the union bargaining committee said in a statement. Kaiser said last Sunday that the union had agreed to return to local bargaining even as workers move forward with the strike. The company said it paused national bargaining last month after what it described as a threatening incident involving a union official. Claiming illegal threats are a line that cannot be crossed, according to Greg Holmes, Kaiser's chief human resource officer, who said in a statement that the union's officials' actions have compromised the national bargaining process and undermined both parties' ability to continue good faith bargaining. Those on strike, including pharmacists, midwives, and rehab therapists, say wages have not kept pace with inflation, and there is not enough staffing to keep up with patient demand. They are asking for a 25% wage increase over 4 years, as countered with a 21.5% increase over 4 years. Still, the company says healthcare and hospitals will remain open during the strike, with some in-person appointments shifted to virtual appointments and some selected surgeries and procedures being rescheduled. In local news for labor this week, the Los Angeles Unified School District, which serves nearly 550,000 students, announced the results of a vote by their members authorizing the union to strike. Earlier last week, the district came to a tentative agreement with the UTLA on a 2024 through 2027 collective bargaining agreement with Teamsters Local 572 and remains in negotiations with its labor partners. The district and AALA Teamsters 2010 met January 29th to continue negotiations of the 2025 through 2028 collective bargaining agreement, and the district presented a package proposal with updated wage increases. Prior to mediation, the district came to a $3.1 billion agreement with all its labor partners to extend district-funded health care benefits for the 2026-2027 plan year to cover 100% of estimated health care benefit premiums for all eligible employees, their dependents, and retirees. The LAUSD is currently faced with structural fiscal challenges driven by declining enrollment, the cancellation of federal relief funds, lower than expected cost of living adjustments, and rising operational costs. As it recognizes the real financial strain on educators and staff, but must make difficult decisions to preserve classrooms, student services, and long-term stability within finite resources, calling for collaboration between all parties to reach a sustainable resolution. To learn more about what's going on with LA Unified, you can visit their website at lausd.org. In the latest labor news this week, union leaders have called out the Trump administration for its obvious rhetorical shift towards white supremacy after social media posts by the U.S. Department of Labor drew comparisons with a well-known Nazi-era slogan. In recent posts from the agency, including a video captioned "Remember Who You Are, American," with the phrase "One Homeland, One People, One Heritage," users of X and Grok, the platform's AI tool, highlighted a similarity with the Nazi slogan "Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer," which translates to "One People, One Realm, One Leader." The similarity to that Nazi slogan is bad, Christopher Hayes, a labor historian and professor at Rutgers University, told The Guardian, expressing alarm over the motivation behind it, the message, the sentiment, and desired outcome. Jimmy Williams Jr., general president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, said the Labor Department had repeatedly imitated far-right and fascist imagery online. And Puneet Maharaj, executive director of National Nurses United, the largest nurses union in the U.S., added, "It is no surprise that a fascist regime would post fascist propaganda on a fascist social media network like X, but it remains concerning to see the DOL making posts that serve a fascist white supremacist agenda." The Department of Labor did not comment on the agency's specific rhetoric on social media. even though the nationalist rhetoric in their recent media campaigns has triggered a chorus of criticism, alarmed historians and senior figures in the labor movement, and concerned workers inside the agency. Under Trump, the Labor Department has published questionable white supremacist artwork, apparently generated by AI, depicting only white male workers. Other posts by the Labor Department frequently promote so-called Americanism and decry globalism, touting misleading claims that all U.S. job gains under Trump have gone to native-born Americans. Inside the Labor Department, the agency's rhetoric has also caused consternation. A Labor Department employee not authorized to speak publicly described the recent social media activity as radical and ideological, and calling in to question fears that such posts have served to further undermine organized labor's trust in the agency, where fear reduces reporting, cooperation, and early resolution. Another former official at the agency also requested anonymity, citing fears of harassment, saying the department's social media profiles were previously a place where workers and employees could find important information developed by policy experts. Now, it's a place where they can find AL slop developed by a 23-year-old with no discernible insights on work or workers. In LA union news, the Fair Games Coalition, made up of community leaders, labor organizations, and advocates, announced the launch of the overpaid CEO tax initiative in front of the Tesla Diner in West Hollywood on January 14, 2026. The overpaid CEO tax initiative is a people-powered ballot measure to ensure that corporations that contribute to extreme wealth inequality pay their fair share so that working families in Los Angeles can thrive. A group of Los Angeles labor unions is proposing a ballot measure that they say would combat income inequality in the city by raising taxes on companies whose chief executive officers make at least 50 times more than their median paid employee. The proposal is sponsored by the Fair Games Coalition, a collection of labor groups that include the Los Angeles Teachers Union, and comes on the heels of a statewide ballot proposal for a one-time 5% wealth tax on California billionaires that would raise money for health care for the most vulnerable. According to proponents, 70% would go to the Working Families Housing Fund, 20% would go to the Street and Sidewalk Repairs Program, and 5% would go both to the After School Programs Fund and the Fresh Food Access Fund. In order to place the measure on the November ballot, supporters must collect 140,000 signatures in the next 120 days. Critics say the proposal is misguided and would drive business away from the city. But United Teachers Los Angeles President Cecilia Maillart Cruz said teachers support the proposal because it would not only raise money for after-school programs, but also help teachers find housing in L.A. The ordinance, if passed by voters, would impose an additional tax of up to 10 times the company's regular business tax based on the pay difference between the highest paid employee at the company and their median earners. According to the coalition, the current city business tax is between 0.1% and 0.4% of gross receipts. If a top manager at a company makes between 50 and 100 times the median employee, the company will pay an overpaid CEO tax equal to the business tax otherwise paid by the company. If the top manager makes greater than 500 times the median employee, the business would be required to pay an additional tax of up to 10 times the business tax otherwise owed. And just in case any of our 90.7 FM KPFK listeners might doubt the need for listener-supported public radio, or thinks oligarchs can be trusted with American media, the Washington Post has announced cuts to one-third of its staff, slashing hundreds of jobs across the newsroom and other departments in an effort to trim costs and reshape coverage. The layoffs will affect journalists in nearly all news departments, including the sports, foreign, technology, and breaking news teams, as well as business and technological staff. The Post has struggled with financial losses and subscriber declines in recent years and claims the restructuring is intended to make the Post more flexible and provide more relevant content. So the Post will close its sports department in a current form, but will retain some roles in that coverage area. It is shrinking the international coverage and will focus on national news, investigations, and advice on health and wellness topics. The Post will restructure its metro section with focused coverage for local print subscribers, but it's closing its book section and suspending its Post Reports podcast. The Post lost $77 million in 2023 and $100 million in 2024 as it contended with traffic declines from sources including Google and Facebook, and the company said Wednesday that organic search traffic has fallen by nearly half in the past 3 years. In recent weeks, Post journalists, including foreign correspondents, local news reporters, and members of the White House team, have made public pleas asking the paper's owner, Jeff Bezos, to maintain their jobs. The Post has conducted multiple rounds of buyouts and layoffs in recent years, eliminating hundreds of jobs across departments after the paper faced immense backlash in fall 2024 when Bezos pulled a pre-written endorsement of then-Vice President Kamala Harris just before the presidential election. But Jeff Bezos said later he wanted to narrow the Post's opinion section to focus on support and defense of so-called personal liberties and free markets, rather than offering a place to air a range of viewpoints. MAGA journalism at its finest. And that's our show for this week. We're asking our labor partners, locals, and regional officers to seriously consider underwriting this show, because Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. So please, contact the station at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Or go to kpfk.org. That's kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. We need to hear from you. Email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com, and please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. This is Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr with Kristen Parker. Our thanks to Steve Zeltzer, Enrique Sanchez, Dan McCrory, Gary Scott, and our guests. Please continue to give what you can to keep us going. We're all in this together, and of course, always remember to
educate, agitate, and organize.
Got so much work today,
This is Nick, host of Bike Talk Online at KPFK since 2008. I used to have a car, but you don't need a car to get around LA, and we talk about that every episode.
Just do it!
I donated my car to KPFK, called 877-KPFK-AUTO. They took it away. Tax deduction. Anyone can have their car taken away. Cars, boats, motorcycles, any fossil fuel vehicle. Leaf blowers, not a vehicle. Call 877-KPFK-AUTO. Donate your car to KPFK. Help the station, and commute by bike. There's no traffic on a bike.
The Pacifica mission statement
is to establish a foundation
organized and operated exclusively for educational purposes
to encourage and supply outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community
to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, shades and colors
to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all of such groups,
to promote the study of political and economic problems and of the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms,
to promote the full distribution of public information, to obtain access to sources of news not commonly brought together,
and to employ such varied sources in the public presentation of accurate, objective, comprehensive news.